Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and it has been a great week talking about family financial matters this week. I have certainly gotten a lot of great advice. I hope you have as well. We've got more great advice and information later on this hour. So we talk about being good stewards, and what does that mean when buying a home? Is it a good time to buy a home? Not a good time? What do you need to do to be ready to buy a home? All those things we're going to talk about here in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. If you'd like more information about Concordia, be sure to visit our website, KFUOAM.org, and then go to the sponsors section. Click on Concordia University, Wisconsin. Find all kinds of information. It'll take you right to their website, and you can find out a lot about them. And we are very grateful for their support of this show. And also, if you'd like to join the conversation today, if you have questions or comments as we're talking about buying a home and being good stewards, then you can call us here in the studio at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us questions and comments if you don't want to, if you're too nervous to go on the air. You can email us here at family@kfuo.org. All week long, we've been discussing family financial matters, and we've been discussing it really from the perspective of from the scriptural perspective. Psalm 89:11 says, "The heavens are yours, Lord. The earth is also yours. The world and all that is in it, you have founded them." So we've been approaching stewardship and family financial matters from that perspective. That everything that we have is truly not our own, but rather something that God has entrusted to us for a time. And that certainly is very different from the perspective that the world has about money and assets and even our home. So today, joining us in the studio here, giving us graciously their time, we have Jim Doerr, president of Coldwell Banker Gundaker, with us today. Welcome, Jim.
Welcome. It's good to be here. Thank you.
And also joining us in the studio, Kathy Vogt, regional manager for Coldwell Banker Home Loans. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you for having me as well.
Wonderful to have you here. So let's start with Jim. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your position at Coldwell Banker Gundaker.
Well, as you mentioned, I am the president of Coldwell Banker Gundaker. I've been in the business this week. It'll be 36 years. And I was born and raised here in St. Louis, Missouri, grew up in South City, and have been in the real estate business so long that I hardly know how to do anything else. So it's been a lot of fun. It's a great business, and really get to interact and meet a lot of great people along the way.
And I can certainly tell that just by the conversations we've had prior to today's show and how you're passionate about what you do. So it's great that you have a job that you enjoy. And I think that'll show through as we talk about these things today. So let's start with, let's get into it in the topic at hand today. From the perspective that all that we have is a trust from God, before we even talk about the market and the current housing market, in general, what can be some advantages of buying a home as a good steward? And we'll also talk about the disadvantages and dangers and things to look out for.
Well, certainly one of the great advantages of owning your own home is if you're fortunate enough to be blessed with children, it's a great environment to raise a family. That doesn't mean that if you're renting property, it's not a great environment, but there's nothing like owning your own home and having an environment where it's safe for your children, safe for your family, a place that you can gather with friends, have good fellowship with members of your church, or just to reach out to people in your neighborhood who may not even be believers. So there's a lot of wonderful benefits in that regard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can talk about the financial perspective as we go forward, but it's also, I think, a good use of the financial blessings you've been given as well. I think that housing has proven over the years to be a great investment, and it's a way for people to save money just by building equity. And it's I just think it's a good way to manage your finances as well as have a wonderful place to live.
So it really provides a twofold benefit, the opportunity, especially if you have a family, but even if you're single, having a home can provide a place of a place for that family to grow, or a place to relax, a place to connect with others in the community. Not that you can't do that when you're renting, but certainly when we buy a home, we're more likely there to be there long term than renting. So we're more likely to plant roots there, and not just at the home, but also in the community, and get to be a part of the community and grow with that community, get to know the neighbors. And as you mentioned, the opportunity to tell the good news about Jesus to our neighbors and those who come from all kinds of different backgrounds. So certainly buying a home can help us plant roots and be there a little bit longer. And then the financial side, as you pointed out, the saving. And that was the question that my wife and I were discussing. Is it, what are the advantages of buying a home in terms of saving? Is it better to buy and save or to rent and save? How do you figure that out? You know, if you can, depending on what the market looks like, and a home payment or mortgage payment is going to be pretty, higher than our rent. Is that a good move, or I don't know. What advice do you have?
Well, naturally, I'm biased because I'm in the business of of listing and selling houses. But I do believe that the facts speak for themselves, and that is, even if the house payment is a bit more than the rent payment, the fact is that over time, from the very first payment that you make on your mortgage, you are building equity. And of course, the longer you're in the home, the longer that you pay down that mortgage, the every month the equity portion of that payment goes up. So as opposed to renting, where you're paying the landlord for the right to live there, mm-hmm. by virtue of the fact that you're paying the lender, but part of the payment is for interest and the other portion is for building equity, you're in essence saving some of those building a nest egg for the future. You're saving money. So it's, I just think, hands down, it's pretty clear that from that perspective, it's a much more beneficial way to spend your hard-earned dollars.
Let's talk about first-time buyers versus someone who's buying another, buying their second or third home. What could be the advantages? I'm assuming what we've been talking about primarily so far would be first-time buyers. What about looking at, our family's growing and we need to move to something bigger, or we think we need to move to something bigger? What are the questions we need to ask to determine that?
Well, often it's this constant tension that exists between are we satisfied? Sometimes people just want to move because they want something fancier and glitzier and bigger and
sure.
something they can show off to their friends. But that's really not what we're talking about today. So I would say that, it's pretty obvious that if you're in a small place that is too small for your needs, you have a growing family, obviously you're going to be looking for space. But also one of the big drivers for those who have children or those who are expecting children is the quality of the school district. That is a huge factor mm-hmm. For those who are going to use public education. And even if you're going to send your children to private schools, it's still often advantageous to live in a very good school district, a school district with good ratings and a good track record of success, because the property values in those higher rated school districts certainly will be much better than those in lower rated school districts. And as I've been talking here, I know I keep talking about families and children. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that lots and lots of buyers today are single people.
Absolutely.
And in fact, single women are the biggest growing demographic of home purchasers in the United States today. Mm-hmm. In fact, the number of women purchasing homes as single people, that has soared 120% in the last 20 years. So it's really a trend that's in motion right now.
Mm-hmm. And as a single person, you probably need to branch out and get the insights from other folks. I know even my wife and I, in looking at homes, trying to gather insights from those, but us being able to bounce ideas off of each other and ask each other questions, and usually the things that she thinks of, I don't think of, and vice versa. So it's valuable. I can see how in having a partner in that decision and thinking through those things, it's valuable to have someone else to bounce those ideas off of. And the questions that we have, sometimes we'll get to a question, we're like, well, neither one of us know the answer to that. What are the things that that we really need to think of? I know we're going to talk about the really more the financial side of it here in the second segment, but in the first half of the show, what are the things that we need to think about and look at, especially for the first time buyer when you're looking at a home? What are the things that you're going to look at when you're looking at a home, and how that matches up with what your needs are?
Well, there's a lot of factors, obviously, yeah. A lot to look at. But I have to say one thing is, first of all, just curb appeal. Because even if you think a house is perfect for you, maybe because it's priced right, but you have to look ahead and say, okay, I may not live in this house forever. So if it has great curb appeal, if it's attractive or can be made more attractive, let's say it's a fixer-upper and all it needs is a little trimming of landscaping, let's take out the bushes that are overgrown and that sort of thing and make it look really nice from the street, that will say a lot for your ability to resell it down the road. So on the one hand, even though you're focused on the here and now and you want to buy that house today and you're dreaming of, you know, how it's going to be when you live there, you need to think about the future as well as you're approaching the front door. You also need to consider, what does the rest of the neighborhood look like? Before you even step foot in the front door, I think you need to drive around the neighborhood, surrounding streets. If you're in a high-density area like the city, drive around a pretty wide radius, because sometimes in certain neighborhoods, one block looks great and the next block not so good. And that's important for resale and for hopefully when you buy a house, if you have some appreciation in value, that's the hope, that you want to make sure that the surrounding properties won't be devaluing your property. Then once you get in, obviously, depending upon what kind of property you're looking at, let's assume it's a first-time buyer and it may be a modestly priced home, it could be that it needs some fixing up. So you need to be able to look past some of the cosmetics, you know, the shocking purple paint or the all-black room that somebody thought was really cool.
Which is easier for me to do than for my wife, I'm sure. But she could see past it, too.
Right. But some people don't have that vision. But you really need to focus on what I'll call the bones of the house. The systems, the plumbing system, the electrical system. I mean, there's still properties in St. Louis that have old fuse boxes as opposed to more modern electrical service. And, you know, that will cost money. There are a lot of things that would be required to bring a house up to code or up to today's standards that cost a lot of money. And people sometimes walk into a house, in contrast to what I was saying about one that needs to be fixed up. They might walk into a house that looks really great. They've painted it white. They've got new carpeting and they have hardwood floors. It looks terrific, but the air conditioner is on its last legs. The roof is on its last legs. The plumbing system has, you know, is taped together with an ancient water heater. You name it. So it's really important to sort of look at it from the system level up. And that's not the tendency that we have as buyers. We tend to buy homes emotionally based upon how it looks, how we feel about it. Can you envision yourself living here? And it's really important to have someone take a good hard look at it. So let's also assume you're not all that skilled. You don't know anything about heating systems. Most of us don't, or electrical systems. You're not an electrician. Well, it's important to get a good building inspector, or if you have somebody, a friend or whatever, come in with you. And if you're looking at the property alone and you're a single buyer, get some good advice. But for sure, hire a building inspector after you write the contract to check it out, because you'll get some good insight from them.
Now, when you talked about taped up plumbing, Kathy, you were laughing like you've seen it before. You've seen some.
I have, and especially when people are looking at foreclosures. You're going to see all sorts of things. And so, yes.
What are the, so say our budget says, our budget's pretty limited and we're thinking fixer-upper is the way to go. What are the things that we really need to be aware of when we're thinking about a fixer-upper? Obviously, we know that you're going to have some money to do the fixing-upping. And so what all do you need to, you've talked about the systems. What do we need to think about, and how does that affect our decision of whether or not it's going to be a good move as a steward? What are the things we need to think about? Kathy, you want to take that one?
What I find a lot of times when borrowers come to us and they are buying that first house, they are looking for properties that maybe are a bit more modestly priced that do need some work. But from a financing perspective, as long as it's cosmetic in nature, i.e. the painting, or maybe it needs updated carpeting or things of that nature, those things are not anything that's going to adversely impact the collateral of the loan. Mm-hmm. However, if the property has a foreclosure as an example, and the kitchen cabinets are missing, and it's not functionally mm-hmm. Able to wash clothes, go the toilets are gone, sure. all sorts of things that you see, then the lending side of it, that collateral is not going to be an acceptable piece of property, no matter whether you have the resources to do all of that yourself or not, because the lender is going to want it to be in satisfactory condition at the time of closing, not after closing occurs.
Sure. Jim, go ahead.
I would also kind of go back to this whole building inspection mm-hmm. idea. And I think especially for a first-time buyer, I think it's really important, because so often they're scraping together every possible dollar for a down payment to be able to qualify for the loan. Mm-hmm. It's really important that they take a good hard look and try to make some estimates, get some professional advice maybe on what it might cost to replace the roof or replace the plumbing, or not the plumbing, but the water heaters and that sort of thing, if they look like they're in really bad shape. And then whatever their estimates are, they probably should double it. Their estimates in their mind, because often one thing leads to another. So what you want to avoid, being a good steward, is to put yourself in a situation where maybe you qualified for the loan, but you really can't afford to live there, because mm-hmm. there's lots of maintenance in owning a home. There just is. It's just the way it is. That's why they had a movie years ago called The Money Pit, because sometimes that happens. Hopefully not to you as a buyer, but it can happen. So it's really important for people to have enough money saved so they make a good decision when they buy, and that they don't run into it blindly.
Sure. Earlier you mentioned emotional buying. Now, I could see that when I'm grocery shopping or even, other things, shopping for electronics. Sometimes there might be, I need that. We've got a baby on the way. We need that camera. And even salespeople have used that as a means of trying to get us to buy things. We have a baby due in September. And so certainly emotional buying is something that happens in our household right now. And my wife is not the one that's primarily guilty of that. Probably would be me. So emotional buying, when it comes to a home, what are some things that you can, any suggestions or recommendations, safeguards to put in place? I know my wife and I bounce ideas off of each other. Any other advice of how to look out for that emotional buying and make sure that you're not just getting into a situation where, like you said, you're buying something that is really, the maintenance is going to be higher than you can handle.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, because it is truly one of the most emotional purchases that most people make, for a couple of reasons. One, in most cases, it's the biggest financial investment most people will ever make. Mm-hmm. In many cases, it's the biggest loan, if they're borrowing money to buy the house, which most people do. It's the largest loan they'll ever take out with a lender. So there's a lot of emotion and stress tied to that. Couple that with moving all your household goods and your everything you've accumulated, however large amount that may be, you're moving that, you're going to a new place, you're going to make new friends, you're going to have new neighbors. I mean, there's a lot of stress just involved in that. And then, you're going to, sometimes you get wrapped up, and some people make bad decisions, very snap decisions. They say, I love this place, I have to have it. And so they write a contract, and then a couple days later, it's buyer's remorse. They're like, what have I done? Mm-hmm. I don't think this is the house for me. And it's pretty hard to unravel that when you put your name on a piece of paper.
Sure.
So I guess this is easier said than done, but my advice is to take it slowly, take a deep breath, evaluate. The problem is, in this current market that is improving, you don't have the luxury of taking a lot of time.
Right.
A couple of years ago, when there were lots
you had weeks.
You could take months to decide to buy a house, and that house would probably still be on the market. Today, it's not unusual for a house to come on the market. The sign goes up, and within a day or two, there might be three or four offers on mm-hmm. that same property. So, again, and that's where the emotion kicks in too. Like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, I feel like I really want this, and other people are competing, and then you get in the competitive mode, and assuming you can afford to go raise your price, you're going to do that. And then it gets, could get a little out of hand. And sometimes people get ahead of themselves. But this market that's improving and has been improving for the last couple of years can add to the emotion. So it's easier said than done. I can't say that enough. But whatever you can do to try to remain objective and make a good, sound decision, refer to the scripture, as you mentioned, you know, seek God's wisdom. That's going to go a long way.
Absolutely. Good advice. Thanks. You talked a little bit about the market, and our listeners are worldwide, so we go beyond the St. Louis market. And I know the St. Louis market is certainly improving, as my wife and I have been looking around at what the market looks like here. And you're so right. You know, there were days when we'd see something go on the listings, and we think, hey, we should look at that this weekend. Oh no. Then if it's Tuesday, you can't wait until that weekend to look at it. If it's something that you're interested in, you have to really move quickly if you think that it's even a possibility. What does the market look like nationwide? What are we talking about? What does that look like today?
Well, all real estate is local, and that's the old adage, and it's so true. And it is so localized that even when you talk about St. Louis, you really have to break it down by school district, by area, by street sometimes to really get a good indication of what's going on. But that said, overall in the United States, the market has definitely come back. There are reports that come out constantly. Lots of data is gathered. Lots of eyes and attention get devoted to housing because so often housing leads the country into recession when it tails off, which had happened a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and now that housing is improving, we're seeing an improvement in the overall economy because so much of the economy is tied to housing. About 20% of the economy is tied to housing. So we're seeing a huge increase in some markets. In some cases, I think there's concern in some cities that prices are increasing right now so rapidly that there could be another housing bubble. Places like Phoenix, Arizona, that have seen 23% increase in price this year compared to last year. And last year, they saw a double-digit increase over the previous year.
Wow.
That's of concern. The beautiful thing about St. Louis, and this is true today and always has been, is that we don't seem to have those peaks and valleys that are so extreme. We have slow, steady improvement when the market's improving. And when we fell, when we did for 4 or 5 years, we didn't tumble down the mountain because the peak wasn't as high. In some markets, the stories were just awful about 50, 60, 70% price decreases in 3 or 4 years. So that didn't happen here, and we didn't have quite the devastation. That doesn't mean it was not difficult. There were a lot of people who purchased homes that arguably shouldn't have. Lending was very loose and easy at one period in time, and it's not any longer, but a lot of people got in over their heads and they ended up losing their home, and that is a tragic situation. But right now, the market has been improving pretty significantly. Prices are up. The inventory of properties for sale in the market is down. We have about 5 months of inventory in the St. Louis area. And for your listeners, if you have about 6 months of inventory, that means that's a fairly level degree, if you will, of demand of both buyers and sellers. So 6 months is kind of a balanced market. Anything less than that becomes a market where the sellers have the upper hand. So things are much, much better over the last 24 months here in St. Louis.
You can certainly tell that the market is improving. When we come back from our break, I want to talk more about what the very point that you brought up about when is what's a good investment? What's a wise investment? When's a good time to buy? And we're going to get to talk with Kathy a little bit more about that because we want to be good stewards. We want to make sure that we're making a wise investment. We want to be faithful with what God has entrusted to us. We're talking with the president of Coldwell Banker Gundaker, Jim Doerr, and also with Kathy Vogt, regional manager for Coldwell Banker Loans here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
For years, experts and many parents have believed the unborn child hears things while in the womb. For example, my wife picked a song to repeatedly sing to each of our four sons. And I've seen my newborn children respond to my voice in the delivery room. Many advocate playing music in the hospital for premature infants who are struggling to survive. It's believed music has soothing and healing capabilities. The babies hospitals are desperately trying to save with the latest technology are the same age as those being killed in late-term abortion mills throughout America. Babies who are wanted are afforded the best medicine has to offer, but if the mother chooses abortion, they're violently and brutally killed and cast away as human garbage. This madness has to stop.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS-recognized service organization.
Listeners from around the globe hear the Christ-centered message of Worldwide KFUO.
I am from the province of Ontario in Canada. I listen to your station, KFUO, on my laptop at work.
With today's internet technologies, you can listen on your computers, laptops, and Wi-Fi radios.
26 states are listening to us, and 14 countries, Israel is listening. Switzerland, Kenya, and even Italy.
You can listen on the go, even through your car radios, with your smartphones, podcast players, and tablets.
Hi, wanted to call and say thanks for broadcasting worship services. I'm driving home, about a 45-minute drive. Wanted to hear something uplifting and soothing, and flip the dial, and worship service is just exactly what I needed.
Listen worldwide to the messenger of good news. KFUO at KFUO.org.
The National Park Service says if Congress votes to add President Franklin Roosevelt's D-Day prayer to the World War II memorial in Washington, the agency will work to find an appropriate location for the plaque. Officials with the executive branch agency say concerns that were raised at a Senate hearing Wednesday about separation of church and state don't mean that the Obama administration opposes the plaque's placement. Spokesman Jeffrey Olson says,
"The National Park Service appreciates the importance of faith in the lives of Americans and the efforts by Senator Portman to honor the words that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt prayed with the United States on D-Day."
Ohio Senator Rob Portman is co-sponsoring the legislation. Chris Long of the Ohio Christian Alliance says,
"We're delighted if the Park Service will work in conjunction with Congress for the placement of this plaque."
Long says installing it before next June's 70th anniversary of D-Day is
our hope and desire, and of course the desire of many veterans.
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, just visit their visit our website, kfuoam.org, and go to the sponsor section, click on Concordia University there, and it'll take you right to their website, and you can learn all about Concordia University located in Mequon, Wisconsin, but also all over. They have education sites and other sites around the United States, including right across the street here in St. Louis. We'll today we are talking, continuing our discussion about family financial matters, and we're talking about being good stewards and considering buying a home. And so we have joining us in the studio today Jim Doerr, president of Coldwell Banker Gundaker, and Kathy Vogt, regional manager of home loans for Coldwell Banker. And great to have you both in the studio. And if you're listening today and you have questions or comments, you want to join the conversation, you can do that over the phone or by email. You want to call us in the studio, it's 314-821-0850 here in the St. Louis area. Outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727. Or if you're a little bit shyer or you can't go on the phone because you're at work, you can email us here at family@kfuo.org. So we'd be happy to take your questions or comments. We've got the pros in the house today. So during the first segment, we talked a lot about the market and buying a home, what things go with that, what does that entail in terms of the home aspect. Let's talk about the financial aspect now, Kathy. You're the pro, you're the guru. What are the things that we need to consider financially before making this investment? What do we need to know? What are the things we need to think about in order to decide if this is a good choice for us or not?
Well, what I do with a lot of first-time home buyers who typically have a lot more questions related to that is, you know, compare it to what they're paying in rent now and seeing how that fits within their budget and looking at, you know, can I afford a little bit higher payment to mm-hmm. see what, you know, a price range we should be in. But the key thing I always share, because it's really part of the whole financial, you know, budgeting and looking at things, is that lenders are looking at the gross amount of income a customer has. Mm-hmm. You have to live off of net income. And so I always encourage everyone to sit down and look at their monthly expenses. You know, what are the things I have? I have a car payment. I have car insurance. I have phone bills. I have all these other things that lenders don't see. All we're looking at is that, you know, they have credit card payments. They do have car payments, student loan payments. But we don't care about all the rest of the expense that you have, groceries, you know, things of that, child care, things of that nature. So sure. I always strongly encourage people to sit down and look at their budget first and then determine what they feel is a comfortable payment for them, as well as what their social activities look like, you know, tithing to church, you know, other things, so that, you know, mm-hmm. or do we want to eat beans and weenies for the next, you know, 1 year? So that's very important. Then you need to do that exercise really, you know, on your own to a degree, because obviously we don't see that component.
Sure. So there's certainly a lot to consider when you're talking about financing a home. Where do you need to be? I guess the question is, in terms of saving to prepare to buy a home, any good guidelines in terms of a percentage or what you think would be a really start you off on the right foot?
I mean, there's a variety of different loan programs out there, but the most lenient as far as the least amount of down payment possible would be an FHA loan. Mm-hmm. You can get into a house with a 3.5% down payment, so you could factor that in. And then you're also looking at traditional closing costs, which would include all the expenses involved in purchasing the property from start to finish. And the lender can go over all of those with you. So you really need to be able to look at both of those components combined. The nice thing about an FHA loan is that 3.5% down payment can actually come from a family member. So if you have a generous parent that wants to help out.
Or wants to get you out of their basement.
Right, that's it. Absolutely. They can do that. Whereas on conventional financing, then you'd have to have 5% down, and that money has to be your own. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, when mortgage lenders are talking to first-time home buyers, that's some of the guidance that they should be providing as part of that process, to look and see what the resources are that they have to work with.
And looking at, we've talked about the monthly payments on the mortgage. What about other expenses that we'd in? What all goes into that, and what do we need to consider when we're building that budget?
Right, great question. Because we have taxes, your real estate taxes go into that, and the lender is going to typically escrow that into the total mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. Same thing with your homeowner's insurance. And if you're putting less than 20% down on a conventional loan, as an example, and or an FHA loan, you're also going to have mortgage insurance. Mm-hmm. And that is dependent upon, again, the amount that you're borrowing and those factors. So it's more than just the principal and interest payment that you're making, as Jim alluded to before. So you have to look at that big picture in the whole scheme of things. And obviously, the higher your taxes are or things of that nature, then the lower the loan balance will need to be to keep you within that, whatever that comfort zone is that you have established. But the lender can figure that out for you. If they know that $1,000 a month is what you're comfortable with, then they can back in and estimate potentially what those expenses are based upon the area that you're looking at, and then sort of determine what loan amount that's going to put you at.
Up to this point, I would just assume we're talking about the person with a fair, decent credit record. Any advice to the person that doesn't have the ideal credit record, ideal credit score? What would be your advice to that person who thinks, I really would like to buy a house. That would be a good investment for me. That would be the mortgage payment would be way better than the rent that I'm paying right now. But my credit history isn't that great. How am I going to, I really want to make this move so that I can, really be, financially responsible. Any advice for that person?
Yes. I mean, we saw a lot of, people get into that frame of mind back, before the credit crisis hit. And we called that the subprime loan type of program. And unfortunately, many of those people that ended up buying, as Jim alluded to, were probably not in the right position to buy and ultimately ended up, losing their house, which is a horrible
sure. Devastating.
Hardship.
Yeah.
Yes. So what I really tell folks is that, you have to plan for that budget. You have to also then let the lender take a look at your credit. Every type of loan is a little bit different. FHA is a bit more flexible as it relates to credit scores and or, late payments. Conventional financing is going to be a little bit tighter. And as the market has constricted over the last couple of years. So if somebody comes in and you can kind of tell, I've been in this industry for over 25 years, so we can certainly add guidance to say, if you want to just take the effort and the discipline for the next 6 months and do these things, you're going to be in a much better place and your credit score is probably going to improve and you're going to be able to get a more attractive loan program versus trying to do it right now and not maybe get the best, product available at the time. And sometimes people don't want to discipline themselves to take that extra 6 months, or sometimes it might be 12 months. And, if they've had a past bankruptcy or something of that nature, the time frame's going to be even longer.
Obviously there are quite a few people who experience that devastation of losing a home. What does the future look like for them? And any advice for them down the road? What is it going to take to recover for many of those people? Any thoughts on that?
The traditional time frame from the time of either a short sale or foreclosure, if they're going to secure FHA financing, is typically 3 years. Now, if that short sale or foreclosure happened to already be on an FHA loan, it's going to be a bit longer. So 4 years is kind of a good number to use. As far as credit is concerned, if there's been late payments and things of that nature, then it's usually looking at the past 24 months. Trying to keep especially rent payments and any other payments that they have current during that time frame, because that weighs most heavily on what a consumer's credit score is going to look like. Payments that were made a long time ago or late a long time ago and or medical collections, perhaps things of that nature, don't play into it as much.
Okay. We've talked about FHA loans, and I know we hear about them in the news all the time, and we've talked about buying a home. What does that really mean for the layperson who really hasn't, the person who's never bought a home before, never really paid attention to that? What does that mean? Jim, you're nodding your head. What does that mean, an FHA, purchasing a home through that process?
You know, I think I'll let Kathy cover that, even though I'm shaking my head. She is, as you can tell from her responses, she really knows this business inside and out. So I think she'd give a much more comprehensive answer to this question than I would.
Sure.
FHA is a loan that's actually backed by the Federal Home Loan or the Federal Housing Administration. Mm-hmm. And people think, that's a bad type of loan. It certainly is not. And back, many years ago, FHA did have a bit of a stigma to it as it related to the condition of the property. But they have now since evolved over the course of the last, 5 or 6 years to have that look very parallel to that of a conventional loan. They are, again, looking at the value of the property and very and not paying as close attention to, anything unless it's going to be a big expense item, like the roof looks like it's mm-hmm. is badly worn, is going to have to be replaced. So they're not as particular about the property as they once were. So from that standpoint, I think a lot of consumers have stayed away from that product, or they think that because it's insured by the federal government, which now technically most of the loans are that are even going conventionally because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are now owned by our government. So from that standpoint, it all pretty much looks the same. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to make a certain level of income to be able to qualify for that loan. It's available for any consumer as long as the loan amount that you're borrowing based upon the county that they're buying in. For example, St. Louis County, it's $281,250. So you could not buy a $300,000 property unless you wanted to put that difference down, which sort of defeats the whole purpose of that loan. So,
what are the pitfalls that we really should watch out for, so that we don't end up in that situation that we were talking about earlier, where you end up with either having to do a short sale or foreclosure, things like that? What are the pitfalls we need to? Obviously, we need to be prepared, but are there any things that are just red flags that you should really be looking out for?
Well, I think part of it where we saw a lot of the two components that really caused our credit crisis is people buying homes that technically didn't have the ability to in the first place. Mm-hmm. So that whole option has been eliminated. So that really can't happen anymore in the environment that we live in today. The other thing that happens is that, as Jim mentioned, you get into the house and you find out things that you didn't have any way of knowing, that the furnace is bad and it has to be replaced, or the roof and those types of things. So by having the building inspection, which I think is a very critical part of the consumer's choice on that property, the lender really doesn't look at that, mm-hmm. Is also as equally important. Unfortunately, in a situation where maybe you lose your job,
right.
Mm-hmm. Or something, happens, a death or divorce or any of those things that can create hardship. The important thing is to reach out to your lender, right away. I don't know that there's any way to totally avoid that situation, but the better prepared you are up front before you start the process will hopefully help eliminate some of those.
Sure. You're right, though. There are some unforeseen circumstances, losing a job or extreme medical expenses, things like that. Jim?
I would also add that once someone's in a home, they've qualified for the loan, and you mentioned people who, how do you avoid getting in over your underwater? Mm-hmm. How do you avoid a short sale situation or getting behind on your mortgage payments? And I would say this, that someone that qualifies for a loan, they're happy, that's great, but they still need to have a conservative mindset. So often when people get in trouble, it's because they get in the house and then they start using their credit cards to buy furniture and all this stuff. And, mm-hmm. do we really need all that stuff right now? Mm-hmm. About a little delayed gratification, which is not what the media and advertisers tell us, we should practice. But
we're a little bit different here.
Right. But, that is where people get into trouble. Or they buy a house. It's never had a garage. They've been a renter, so maybe they were parking outside, so they have a garage. I'm going to go out and buy a new car. I just bought a house. I'm going to buy a new car, too, because, financing for new cars might be a little easier. So, those are where people get caught up in consumerism, the consumer society, and they can get really burdened with all kinds of debt beyond the mortgage debt. So that's something you have to really be aware of as well, to be really cautious there.
Mm-hmm. And certainly isn't faithful stewardship either, you know, willingly walking into that debt for those purposes, you know, to be a consumer, probably isn't the wisest way to go about it. Kathy, you mentioned those unforeseen circumstances, and you said reach out to your lender. When that happens, you lose a job, you have excessive medical bills, you're totally at the mercy of the lender. What are some stories that you've seen or some situations that you've seen where it's worked out?
Well, a part of the environment that we're now in, because of the degree of financial hardship that we saw caused by, number one, the equity not building in the property like, you know, perhaps a lot of people thought when they bought something in 2006 to 2009 that, you know, my appreciation is just going to continue to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You compile that with, you know, something of a loss of a job. There are now parameters in place that lenders have to follow very precisely, and I'm not on the servicing side of the business, so I'm certainly not going to try to be an expert in that category. But you know, they have to go through the process of, you know, having the customer go through what we'll call a hardship sort of financial look at what's going on. And if there's true financial hardship to the borrower and they can't make the payments, the lender is going to tend to work with them, simply because a foreclosure is not a good thing for them. It's not a good thing for the lender as well. So they're going to try to make things you know, work out as best they can. It could be a deferred payment to the end of the mortgage, you know, or a couple of deferred payments, or a reduced payment for a window of time until mm-hmm. they get back to work. It's a variety of different things, but that conversation can't take place unless the consumer, you know, reaches out. And of course,
sure.
the lender is going to be reaching out to them as well during that process.
Sure, but it takes that. And that's hard to do at
yes.
that time, especially, you know, the emotions that come with it when you're just feeling overwhelmed and burdened and the last person you feel like you want to talk to is your lender.
That's right.
You know, the person that you have a big debt to, certainly the last person you want to reach out to, but that's really the step you got to take if you want any respite. So
yes.
Well, good advice. Thank you. Other thoughts on being good stewards that we need to consider when we're looking at buying a home, or other things that you wanted to share with us today? We've got probably about 6 or 7 minutes here to wrap up. Jim, any thoughts from you or anything else that we need to consider when it's okay. Well, you know, the market is improving and we're seeing that. So that means you're probably pretty busy these days. So things are starting to pick up for you.
We are very busy right now. If you talk to almost any of our Coldwell Banker Gundaker sales associates, you will have them tell you tales of how they're working harder than they've worked in a long, long time. And I think that's a function of the market being better, but it also is a function of lenders being much more proactive about requiring documentation and doing things right. You know, when things were really rocking and rolling back in 2005 and 2006, and anybody could get a loan, the requirements, the difficulty of getting a deal put together was a lot less than it is today. So there, people are working very hard. I would say this, though, for people who are who may have been on the fence, if somebody's listening and they're thinking, gosh, I've been thinking about buying a house, is now really a good time? I would say, you know, naturally, we're always going to say in real estate, it's always a good time to buy. We always say that. But I really think if somebody's been sitting on the fence, it is a good time to buy for two reasons. One, prices are going up. They're not going down. They were going down for a period of 4 or 5 years. That trend changed last year, and it's never going to be less expensive than it is right now. And also, interest rates have gone up, and they're so low by historical standards, rates are, that I really think the only direction they'll go over the long haul is up. They may stay fairly stable for a while, but they're going up. They've gone up a full percentage point in the last 60 days. And I'm not saying that trend is going to continue, but I think that rates will go up. So as a result, if somebody's got a down payment and their credit is going to enable them to qualify for a loan, I'd say don't wait. Get mm-hmm. off the fence, because if they think prices are going to dip or rates are going to come back down another point, I don't think that's going to happen.
It's the market's not looking like that right,
right
now.
Right, right.
And I'll give a little bit of advice there as well, is that, you know, right, you know, if you're not sure, if you're, you know, again, you've just kind of decided to stay out of that, you know, consideration, is go ahead and reach out and get pre-qualified by a lender. See where you're at. Then determine if you're not in the right place at this time, what do I need to be there 6 or 12 months down the road? It also, the documentation as part of that process is, looks so much different than it did 5 years ago. So I guess the one bit of advice that I always have my associates share with consumers is just be willing to provide anything that's asked for, because I know that sounds a bit overwhelming, but
that was actually my next question. Okay. What's the typical documentation that you're going to be, you know, you need to start preparing?
Right. I mean, the basic things you would typically consider, you know, your pay stubs. You need, you know, two pay stubs that, you know, are current. You need 2 months bank statements. You need your last 2 years W-2s. If you're self-employed, it gets a little bit more cumbersome, because then you have to provide your tax returns for the last 2 years and even, you know, a profit and loss statement, you know, through the course of 2013. In addition to that, you know, it also depends upon, you know, other components. So that's why it's really, I mean, I hate to say it, but you kind of have to undress for the lender to see where you're at. I mean, that's not right. That's not the right thing for this particular project, but it kind of feels that
way.
Sure,
you're very vulnerable
you
at that point.
You absolutely are, yes. Yeah. So I think that you just need to be prepared for that process.
That's a good way of putting it, I think. I don't think that's a wrong way of looking at it. You know, you're very vulnerable when you have to put all this documentation out. It's very personal information. So you want to make sure that you have someone that you're comfortable with, that you trust, and, you know, who's going to be looking at all of this very personal information, because if you're not working with someone you trust, then that's going to be a really difficult situation. And then down the road, if you get into a difficult situation where you're not able to stay on top of your payments, you want to have a lender that you can trust, that you feel comfortable reaching out to. So that's really important, I think, as well, to be able to have that open communication, to know a little bit about them. So building that relationship, and it may happen before, like you said, you talk to a lender and then realize, okay, I need 6 months, I need a year before I'm really ready to be in this position to buy something. That can be time to build that relationship as well, just checking in from time to time. So that's certainly a good move as well. Well, with about a minute or so left to wrap up, I want to say thanks to both of you. Any thoughts, next steps, you know, if you want to give any advice in the next minute or two, here's your last chance to give the best advice in the world for those who are thinking about it.
Well, I mentioned a couple seconds ago that if somebody's on the fence, they should really consider buying. The other thing is, you know, if somebody's listening and they're a renter and they're saying, gosh, I'll never be able to do it, I think Kathy's advice is a good one. Talk to a lender. You might be surprised. Studies have shown that it is much less expensive to own than to rent, because rents are going up and it's never been cheaper to buy than it is right now with low interest rates. So I would encourage people to reach out to a lender and get that good advice, because they may be surprised.
Yeah. Okay. I would agree with that as well.
Yeah.
That was going to be my parting words.
Great minds think alike.
Reach out and start making those wise decisions. Don't feel like you have to jump into it right now, but to start building those relationships and start getting to know more about it. Familiarize yourself with the process. Well, I really appreciate the time that both of you have given us today, and I feel more enlightened, a little bit more comfortable about that next step as my family continues to look at what we're going to do next as well. That's the best thing about the show, is that I get to talk to all the experts and ask all the questions. I don't have to be the expert. I get to ask the experts all the great questions and all this great advice. Hopefully, as our listeners, you've been benefiting from this as well. And speaking of, as listeners, if you have questions or a suggestion for a show, you can email us at family@kfuo.org and give us some feedback. Let us know what you would like to know about here on Faith and Family. Well, it has been a pleasure talking with you, Jim and Kathy. Thanks for your time today. And I wish you well, and certainly you're welcome back here at KFUO anytime.
Thank you, Andy. We've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you.
All right.